You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined by my esteemed colleague at Horns247, the one and only Eric Henry, fresh from I-35 and a trip to Waco and the new Foster Pavilion, where we had a tale of two halves. We will get into Texas basketball. Played great in the first half, led by 14 against the 11th-ranked Baylor Bears, and then record scratch. Everything goes to hell in the second half. Dylan DeZue, their star big man, goes down with a knee sprain, but Rodney Terry's saying we think he'll be okay. We'll get to that. But we're 14 days out from Texas spring football, Eric, and we had 11 Longhorns at the NFL Combine. We need to touch on that. Texas baseball had a rough go of it. Texas women's basketball is already to go in the Big 12 tournament. We will touch on all of it, and of course, have some take it or leave it to wrap it all up. But let's start with the NFL Combine, Eric, because Xavier Worthy lit the Combine on fire by breaking John Ross's record in the 40. Xavier Worthy goes 4.25 on his first attempt and then 4.21 on the second attempt, which I think is absolutely nuts, because most guys don't improve on their second attempt, and he improved by 0.4 of a second. Eric,
Chip, first off, always a pleasure to hop on the Flagship Podcast. It was again with you weekly. It is the highlight of my week. Apologies to the folks who will be watching this. I'm having some washer and dryer issues. It's been out for the past 36 hours, hence the tank top. I do not have a shirt with sleeves. As Chip might attest, that this would be intentional. This actually was not intentional on my part. So apologies in advance there. But no, getting to what you talked about, a strong NFL combine performance for a lot of Longhorns, obviously the headliner there. The speedster, those of us who are around this program, those of us who, you know, those of you, I should say, who are Longhorn fans, certainly know that Xavier Worthy's fast. But this was an opportunity for him to showcase his speed to a nationwide audience. And Chip, the big thing for me that I think is really interesting, and I've been kind of toying around with this in my head, right? Because as I led with, we know that X is fast. And I think for people like us, we're not too particularly shocked, right? Even the fact that maybe the most shocking thing was that he ran the 40 twice. I know I tweeted out, once I saw that he was going to run again after the 4.25, that, like, if I were Xavier Worthy's agent, I would be phoning down to him, telling him, sir, you have run the final 40-yard dash of your adult lifetime. There'd be no need to ever do that again. And X promptly proved me to be a fool by deciding that, you know, once he learned, and for the folks who didn't catch it, he'd actually taken off his cleats. You know, some of the guys they were saying, all right, you know, take the cleats off. You're done. You're done. And then once he was made aware, I don't know if it was by the players there or by Stacey Dales of the NFL Network in Oklahoma, grabbing nevertheless, that the record was attainable, 4-2-2 of John Ross, he decided to do it again. And Chip, you know, two things come to mind. One, I don't know how much more money or how much of an improved draft stock that X kind of attained by running it again. However, I do think there's some really meaty substance to get into in terms of those of us who knew he was fast, right, are not stunned. But does a pair of 4-2, or I guess sub 4-2-5 times, Chip, does that give him that John Ross boost that we can call it, the Darius Hayward Bay boost? You know, God bless Al Davis. If he were alive, he'd be a Raider right now. Wouldn't be a question. You know exactly where he would be heading, right? Does that give him a boost? And I guess I'm asking the question, Chip, under the context. And of course, we'll get into performance of all the Longhorns who certainly, you know, helped their case. But I guess it's a curiosity of mine, Chip. You know, was it that much of a secret that Xavier Worthy is quite frankly one of the fastest players in not only all college football, but fastest humans alive? I mean, that to me wasn't stunning, but I guess I'm just curious if this pair of times truly is going to solidify him as a top 20 pick in your mind, Chip.
I do not think that it will solidify him as a top 20 pick. I still think it's amazing, but and he said, I mean, he said in his interview the day before he ran it, I want to run 4-2. And so when he ran 4-2-5, you're thinking, ooh, okay. Well, and kudos to him for having that mindset. I think the 40 time with the tape we saw from him in 2023, which seemed like a more determined, more focused, tougher Xavier Worthy, more physical than we saw in 2022, will certainly make him appealing for a team that feels like it might already have a possession guy and needs a speed guy. And obviously there are concerns about his, you know, being 165 pounds, but Devontae Smith is barely over 165 pounds and he's doing just fine with the Philadelphia Eagles. I wrote that Xavier Worthy now needs to make sure he has a better career than John Ross, who ended up catching 62 career receptions in the NFL before flaming out. So after playing at Washington and being recruited there by Steve Sarkisian. So Steve Sarkisian knows, we know he loves speed, and by God, he's coached the two fastest guys ever at the NFL Combine. So, yeah, I think A.D. Mitchell running 4.34 at 6'2" and 205 pounds with 39.5-inch vertical and an 11'4" broad jump. Woo! I know he helped himself. And, you know, Ryan Watts at 6'2", 208 pounds, went 4.53 in the 40, but he had a 4.13 short shuttle, which is outstanding for a guy his size, with a 40.5-inch vertical, 10'5" broad jump. I think he helped himself. JT Sanders, you know, 4.69 in the 40, but his tape is, he's got, you know, great hands. Byron Murphy, I think, put on a show. And Tavondre Sweat coming in at 366 pounds, Eric. There were rumblings he might come in, you know, closer to 380 because he didn't weigh at the Senior Bowl, but he weighed in at 366, ran a 5.27 40, looked pretty good in the drills. Still don't know if that's enough to get him into the first round, but You know, Jordan Whittington, God bless him, had a hamstring injury and did 18 bench reps of 225. That was the fifth most among receivers. A&M's Anais Smith had 21 reps of 225. I know you can appreciate that because you're a, you know, you're on that bench press just about every day. So you tell me what impressed you.
Jay Witt's 18 reps did impress me because Chip, with the injury, and you knew he wasn't able to do some of the, you know, obviously run and some of the receiver drills. I just thought it was even more important for him to kind of really establish the fact that he's going to be a gritty, physical, strong guy who can impact your team that way. Right. And sometimes you see those things on tape. And listen, not that bench press strength obviously can, you know, always translates over to football strength. Right. But just for the purposes of the fact that he could at least do something, I did think that that was important for him. But quickly to touch on X before I go through as far as what else impressed me. You know, everyone talks about the John Ross factor and makes a comparison, as you said, hopefully I have a better career than John Ross. To me, I don't think it's close. John Ross, and this is no disrespect to him, but I remember at Washington, he had, what, 2-3 years of being a guy who was a reserve, 20-something catches. I think he got hurt the year before he had his breakout year, right, which was like 80 catches. Xavier Worthy's been a consistent, well, maybe consistent is the wrong word, but he's been a better receiver than John Ross over 3 years. So that in terms of just sheer receiver comparison, not even close in my mind. T Sweat weighing in at 366. I thought that was huge, right? You talked about some teams, or I guess some rumblings that he would come in close to that 380-ish mark. Now, listen, for all intents and purposes, it's not, at least in my mind, Chip, it's irrelevant whether he plays at 366. I think if he played last year during the year at 370 something, maybe closer to 380, I don't think the 366 is an impediment as to his play as much as it is a defining, you know, characteristic that this is a guy who won't eat his way out of the league, right? And that he has discipline to at least show up for the combine at 366, right? So again, I'm not saying he can play at, you know, 410. But let's just say if his playing weight's closer to 370-ish, 375, that's fine, right? At least he shows that he has a discipline that when it's time to show up, he could play reasonably close to that listed weight. So I thought that was big. And Chip, I don't know if you saw, I'm not going to be able to quote it verbatim, but it was, they kind of, you know, extrapolated some of T-Sweat's 40 time, right, which is a 5-2 something, and said that that time is analogous to a 170-pound guy running like 4-3. Right. So just to really drive home how much of an athlete Tavondre Sweat is. So got to get that out there out front. Even Christian Jones running a 509, you know, his size. Right. I thought that was impressive as well. But I think, you know, in terms of who had the best combine, you can make the case for X. But I in my mind, it's A.D. Mitchell. You talked about just the well-roundedness of his combine, the sheer combination of speed. I thought the 4.3 time that one caught me off guard. I thought AD was a 4.4 guy. So to know that he was sub 4.4, yeah, you know, that's impressive. You could kind of see with him, you know, in spurts, just the vertical leap and some of those things you had to expect, but getting that 40 time there, I think is really impressive. So all in all, I think it's just a very strong showing for Texas. Not, you know, I didn't see anyone there who in my mind should hurt themselves heading into pro day. And that obviously is key.
Yeah. Now it needs to become the regular thing, right? Like the way that Georgia and Alabama have sort of been dominant at the combine in recent years. Michigan had 18 guys at the combine this year. So, and I think Steve Sarkisian believes that Texas will have a healthy sampling of players at the combine every year. So we've been, you know, we're counting down to spring football. Full disclosure, we're recording on Tuesday, March 5th. We are exactly 14 days away from the start of spring football. And Eric, you've been writing, you know, position inventory for each position. Your most recent addition, the tight ends, we just mentioned JT Sanders moving on. He was at the NFL Combine. So now Talk to me about what we've got at the tight end position.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this a little bit towards the end of last week's flagship, but you know what you have coming in with Gunnar Helm obviously returning. I think the hope for Jeff Banks and Steve Sarkisian is that he can continue to develop a measure of well-roundedness in his game, develop as an athlete. Look, Gunnar Helm is not going to wake up overnight and turn to JT Sanders, right? Like, I'm sure there is an athletic ceiling, and I'm saying it respectfully to Gunnar, right? There's a cap on his athleticism. He's not going to, you know, train his way into running 4.4 and jump out the gym. However, if he can take similar steps, similar, you know, growth that he had from his 2022 to 2023, I think he puts himself in position, Chip, to somehow find a way on the field again. And the reason that's key is you don't bring in an Amari Nyeblack, to not play, right? You know, and if you take a look at his production last year with Jalen Milroe and the amount of targets, he had half the amount of targets that Jatavion Sanders had in this offense. So you know, if you take a guy like him, who, what did JT run, 4.69, and a guy in Nyeblack was from my neck of the woods, Clearwater, Florida, as a track guy, he's probably a legit 4.5 guy, maybe even sub 4.5. I mean, with the time,
he looked fast there, running away from Texas for that 39-yard touchdown catch in Tuscaloosa.
There you go, right? So you know, with his athleticism, he's going to see the field. And Chip, I think he's, in some ways, and this is the best way I can describe him for Horns fans, that I maybe a little bit rawer of a overall tight end than JT was. I think, and that may sound even weird to think, because, you know, sometimes JT Sanders caught flack for his ability as an inline tight end, as a blocker, right? Nyeblack, in that sense, wasn't even used that much as an inline guy. It was used primarily as a guy's going to line up in the slot and even a little bit more on the outside. Part of that, again, is the way Tommy Rees was using him in the offense, but we'll see what he can provide. But Chip, if it's not going to say it's the most, I'm not going to say it's the most important storyline, but it's the most intriguing storyline. Again, we talked about it last week. Steve Sarkisian likes to use two tight ends. And as you astutely pointed out in last week's podcast, you know, it's not even necessarily two tight ends for the purposes of receiving, but a lot of that pre-snap motion that helps out the quarterback is, you know, in the form of the tight end, right? Helping identify, you know, the coverages. Those pre-snap motions kind of assist in that regard, right? And Chip, you go back to last year when you had A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Jordan Whittington, and then, of course, you had the returning Isaiah Nayer come back from injury and Kasey Kahne. The question was, do you go to more 10 personnel, right, in terms of four receiver sets? What ended up being the case was Gunnar Helm, to quote Jeff Banks, busted his ass and found his way onto the field. And we saw more, you know, 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends. Now we've got this litany of receivers, right? Isaiah Bond, Silas Bolden, Matthew Golden finally made it through on the first try. There we go. Kudos for me, right? You got Jonte Cook. You got Jonte Cook as well.
I just
got
to get Amari Nyeblack down.
I got to get Nyeblack down. You got Jonte Cook, who's one of the fastest guys on this team and probably of college football, in all of college football as well. And then, the young guys as well, right? So the same dilemma, Chip. I think the spring is where that will be decided. Steve Sarkisian emphasized the versatility of last year's team. And when I asked him, when did you identify said versatility? He said started in the spring and into the summer. So that to me is a very intriguing storyline. Of course, when you kind of round out the room, you have Juan Davis as well returning and guys like Spencer Shannon and others. But the two names, you know, it's Amari Nyeblack and it's Gunnar Helm. You know, Nyeblack's going to start. You know that for a fact. Gunnar Helm, where does he fit in? Does he get the same amount of run that he got last year? We will see. And if he does that mean that Sark is leaning on his bread and butter, shortening that receiver rotation and his three guys? So it'll be an intriguing storyline for sure, Chip.
Yeah, that really is it kind of comes down to whether Sarkisian, who loves his two tight end sets, is ready or believes that he's got more talent in the receiver room and he needs to get a fourth receiver on the field more so than a second tight end. But we'll find out as spring, football gets going on March 19th. Talked about the transfers coming in And of course, Amari Nyblak is one of those transfers that Texas has brought in, along with talented group of receivers, Isaiah Bond from Alabama, Matthew Golden from Houston, Silas Bolden from Oregon State, who will arrive in June. Kendrick Blackshire, the middle linebacker from Alabama, Andrew Makuba, the safety nickel from Clemson, and Tia Savea, the interior defensive lineman from Arizona. And Eric, you know, when you look at, obviously we know that Bolden, Golden and Bond are going to be guys who are hard to keep off the field. Jonte Cook, I think you're right, is a guy who Steve Sarkisian feels really good about. Had some remorse about not playing him more at times last year. And so that's going to be a fantastic position battle to watch in the spring. But Kendrick Blackshire coming in at middle linebacker, I'm fascinated by this guy because, of course, he finished his high school career at Duncanville and then goes to Alabama, where he redshirted and then played very sparingly in 2022, and probably thought he was going to be the starter at middle linebacker in 2023 with Henry Toa moving on to the NFL. But then Nick Saban brings in Tresman Marshall from Georgia, who was not as highly rated, according to Pro Football Focus, as Kendrick Blackshire, who only played, you know, 100-something snaps compared to Tresman Marshall's 300-plus snaps. I'm fascinated by Kendrick Blackshire, Eric, because obviously Jalen Ford is gone. You know, Anthony Hill can probably do anything. He could probably play five different positions on the football team. But he was dynamic at weak side linebacker. You've got Mo Blackwell trying to put on some weight so that he can play inside middle linebacker. You've got Leonga Lafau, who Jeff Choate called an elite pass dropper, as a middle, but is considered a true middle linebacker. You got David Benda, who played both middle and weak side last year. I mean, this is going to be quite a battle for middle linebacker.
Chip, it's funny you talk about being in love with Kendrick Blackshire, right? You know, I reached out to a friend of mine, Boston College quarterback Grayson James, began his career at FIU, but a former Duncanville quarterback, played with Kendrick Blackshire. I just asked him, I was like, hey, you know, tell me about Kendrick Blackshire. And he responded one word, beast, in all caps, Chip. And listen, Texas, no need to have any shortage of beasts because we know they've got one in Anthony Hill. Right. To your point, I think it's going to be really interesting with that linebacker battle. And what I like, and I don't want to sound like a carbon copy of Steve Sarkisian, but I think there's a measure of versatility with all of these guys. And we kind of hinted at it in last week's podcast, right? If the team doesn't have guys who are locked into one spot, right? Because you know Anthony Hill can come off the edge and rush the passer at any given time. You know David Benda, Quadzilla, right? You know, we saw him make that play against Alabama. Certainly a guy has a tremendous lower half. He can probably, you know, play inside and outside as well. The more versatile these guys are, Chip, I think it's just the more tools in Pete Kwiatkowski's toolbox. And that you don't have to have one guy locked in, right? Because then that way you get more guys on the field, whether it's situation. And I mean, Mo Blackwell as well, right? You know, the former safety doesn't come down and if he beefs up a little bit, but still maintains that speed, right? You know, he's a guy who situationally can do different things. So in my mind, Chip, whether it's, and of course, today's college football, it's so rare you end up playing three linebackers, right? You get spread out a lot. You end up with two and a nickel and whatnot. But if for the circumstances in which you have three linebackers and you have guys who can do different things, or guys at times when you have two linebackers and you can, you know, move some guys around. I just think, and I'll be curious to see, because I know it's going to be a storyline that you'll watch during the spring. I'm really curious to see how this plays out, right? Because whether it's the battle for the starting job or kind of where those reps fit, I think that will play itself out. But if each guy can present a measure of versatility, Chip, let's just use the safety spot from last year. Sark clearly hasn't been afraid to say, I'm going to play multiple guys, right? Now, obviously, the hope is you're getting better production, right? But in my mind, I use the safety example because I think it goes to show that Sark and PK aren't scared to play multiple guys, whether it's even just from series to series, if they see value in doing that.
Yeah, and how do you rotate five guys at safety and have Jalen Ford play almost 800 snaps at middle linebacker, including every single snap, all 82 of them against Oklahoma on a sweltering afternoon at the Cotton Bowl in what turned out to be Jalen Ford's worst game of the season. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it would help to have more of a rotation if the quality is there, if there's no drop off. If Kendrick Blackshire is as motivated as I think, and from what I'm hearing, because he felt like he should have been the starter at Alabama last year, then this is going to get really interesting. Plus, you add the dynamic of a new linebackers coach and Johnny Nansen. Doesn't matter what we've heard about these guys from the previous linebackers coach, Jeff Choate. He's now the head coach at Nevada. I mean, it's going to be about Johnny Nansen and his impression of Anthony Hill and where he fits best and where Blackshire fits best and Mo Blackwell fits best. So this is going to be really something. And look, Jalen Ford, you pour truth serum in him, he probably would say his 2023 season wasn't quite what he expected. If we're talking comparison to his 2022 season, probably a little bit of a drop off. And was that because he played too many snaps? Who knows? But this has a chance to be a real strength, because Jalen Ford told us after the Big 12 title game victory, if Anthony Hill doesn't, you know, go on to become much better than I was here, he said, I'll be disappointed. And Anthony Hill is a guy who, when he was at Denton Ryan, started off as a C-ball hit ball pass rusher. And then as he, you know, evolved in the system, he ended up as the middle linebacker there in his, you know, final seasons at Denton Ryan, and obviously five-star talent. So this is going to be a lot of fun to see how that middle linebacker position plays out during the spring and gives us some indication as to how it will look in the fall with Johnny Nansen as the new linebackers coach. All right, Eric, lots to get to before we get to Take It or Leave It. Obviously, Texas basketball, they won back-to-back games for the first time since January, when they went out to Lubbock and handled business and then came home and took care of Oklahoma State. It was a 52-52 game against Oklahoma State with 12 minutes left. And then Brock Cunningham hits a three, kind of ignites the Longhorns. Kendall Weaver jumps in, scores 11 straight points at one stretch there in the second half. You wrote about how the bench has kind of come to life, and things were looking good in Waco last night for the first half. My God, Max Asemus couldn't miss on the way to a 33-point performance. Caden Shedrick was looking good, holding his own against Yves Misi, who was struggling to find the basket, the talented 7-foot freshman for Baylor. But where was Dylan Mitchell guarding Jalen Bridges, for God's sake? I mean, come on, Dylan. This is, you talk about playing defense all the time. Well, here's your guy. This is your matchup, and Jalen Bridges torched him. 6 of 6 from 3-point range to start the game. No answers. Dylan Dazoo goes down at the 10:50 mark. Texas gives way to the Avalanche. Almost gets doubled up in scoring in the second half. Loses the game. Eric, any positives from this one? Or, I mean, obviously Max Asmus was unbelievable. But Brock Cunningham fouls out. Who else fouled out? Someone else fouled out, but it was a foul fest. I know Baylor went to the line 42 times.
Yeah, Brock Cunningham fouled out. IT Horton.
IT fouled Horton
out as well. You asked me any positives. Two things. One, and we can touch on this probably next week. I tweeted this out, Chip. Put my journalistic, objectivity aside. As a fan, I'm super excited to see March Madness Max Asmus, because you just take a look at this kid's career in March. We know what he did at Oral Roberts leading the team.
Mid-court
Max. But even take a look at the years that Oral Roberts didn't make the tournament. Just look at his March numbers. It's 26.7 points per game he's averaging in the month of March. And I think now, of course, we will talk Dylan Dazoo and see what happens there. I think a part of his offensive explosion against Baylor was just saying, hey, we know that Dazoo, who entered the game with a stomach virus that Dylan Mitchell had actually the game prior at Oklahoma or against Oklahoma State, probably related, we'll see. But Max knew going to this game, like, all right, I got to go on. If we're going to win this game, I got to be that guy, right? The Oral Roberts Max, is a guy who puts points in the hole. So I'm excited to see that guy come tournament time to see if it's, hey, Chip, no pun intended, when the chips are down and we just need to find a win, forget all this other stuff. Max, go be that guy, right? So we'll see what happens there. Really, really excited, Chip, about Caden Shedrick, because this is the first time in a while, nothing on the shoulders after the shoulder surgery, not wearing that black, I don't know if it's a heating pad or a wrap that he wears.
Home Depot belt.
The Home Depot, right. It does actually look like that. To keep the lower back loose, not wearing that. When he's not on the floor, he's not underneath the tunnel, riding the bike. He looks loose and spry, Chip. Quite frankly, if you remember the Empire Classic game when he went for 27-14, and even during that stretch when he just was an active guy in the defensive game as well, getting his hands in the lane and causing deflections, he looked like that guy last night and has for the past two or three games. So that to me is very, very optimistic. And I wrote about the bench. If this team truly is, and we've heard Rodney Terry talk about it, and I'll be the first one to say it on the record, I was getting a little, I thought it was starting to become a little stale, Chip, when RT would say, all right, well, this team hasn't reached its ceiling. There's no denying that this group of this assemblance of talent hadn't reached its ceiling, but you're running out of time, right? It's like, when is it going to reach its ceiling when we're now more than 2/3 into the year and we're still using that refrain, but seemingly now fully healthy and guys kind of having a feel for playing with each other. We got the, really for the first time seeing a starting five that looked like they knew how to play together. And then a bench with Shedrick, Brock Cunningham, and Kendall Weaver. I know you and I can debate this. I don't think I'm betraying your confidence here, Chip, when you are a little bit more of a fan of seeing Kendall Weaver play more minutes as opposed to IT Horton last night. I would say IT, the 8 points, 9 boards, that's the best you're going to get out of him in this group. And I didn't think, quite frankly, it was a byproduct of his playing, 20-something minutes last night, as opposed to Kendall, that cost him that. I think more than anything else, I think the guy or one of the guys we should look at is Tyrese Hunter. For someone who, in Big 12 play, you have 6 games this year that he scored 6 points or less. He comes out, he nails back-to-back threes in 90 seconds. You're thinking, all right, he's going to break out. He's ready to go. Chip, we hear RT talk about Tyrese's defense needing to be the thing that spurs his offense. He looked like he was up to the challenge in that first half. And then after hitting those 2 threes, he goes 2 for 11 shooting. You just want to see more from him. And you hate to bang on the kid because he's such a good kid. And I think, you know, whether it was at Iowa State, him helping them to their run, and Chip last year, you've seen Tyrese Hunter be that guy. But we need it now, you know, especially for whatever Dylan D'Souza's status is. I think that had a bigger impact on last night's game more than necessarily the Kendall Weaver, IT Horton kind of dichotomy, Chip.
Yeah. I mean, it's if someone asked me how do you describe Texas basketball this season, I would say inconsistent. And, you know, for the most part, you can count on Max A. Smith, you can count on Dylan D'Souza. But I don't know what I'm getting from Tyrese Hunter. I don't know what I'm getting from Dylan Mitchell. It was embarrassing last night that the front court for Texas, Dylan Mitchell, Dylan D'Souza, Caden Shedrick, Brock Cunningham, and Zarek Onyema combined for 5 rebounds. And you mentioned IT Horton had 9 rebounds. Kendall Weaver never got into a flow in this game, only played 14 minutes. You know, had a steal, a block, but was not his usual self on the boards. It was not, he only played 14 minutes. But inconsistent. And I know RT's trying to figure out how to get the most out of IT Horton, because you need some depth,
right?
Especially with Tyrese Hunter not being as consistent as you'd like. Kendall Weaver has played really well. He played really well at Tech. He played really well against Oklahoma State. We mentioned he had scored 11 straight points by himself in that Oklahoma State game. And they really needed him last night, and it didn't happen for whatever reason, whether Rodney Terry can see that Weaver just didn't have it, or, you know, I think he only played 4 minutes in the first half.
Right.
So, because I would put, I'd put Kendall Weaver in that category of guys you can usually depend on. Usually for him, it's defense and energy.
And Chip, to your point, really quick, this is going to add, and we talk about the boards and the inconsistency. Dylan Mitchell is the Big 12 second leading rebounder. He's averaging 7.9 boards per game. But it's wild to think that through 30 games, he's averaging 7.9, and yet you don't know necessarily what you're going to get from on the boards from night to night. One night, you might get 13 boards. One night, you might get 1. Right. And I love DM. You know, DM, I've seen him play from the time he was at Sickles High School and Alonzo High School, Tampa, Florida. But he's got to be more consistent.
Yeah, and Jalen Bridges is lighting him up. I mean, and Caden Shedrick was trying to help, and he would leave his guy, and then his guy would burn him. They've got to mix in some zone here, Eric. I mean, when you've got a guy like Jalen Bridges torching you and Dylan Mitchell's not able to do anything about it, he's athletic enough to close out on Jalen Bridges, who's 6'9", Dylan's 6'8", but has big wingspan. If that's not working, mix in a little zone. I mean, just give him something different to look at, for God's sake, because what Ray J. Dennis and Walter got going in the second half, and Walter's attacking the rim and getting to the free throw line, and Jaden Nunn was attacking the, I mean, credit to those guys, because they weren't shooting it very well. Jaden Nunn, who Texas tried to recruit from VCU, was only 1 of 5, but he got to the free throw line 6 times and hit all 6 of his free throws. So look, Baylor's a better basketball team than Texas, but Texas was giving it to them for the first 20 minutes. It was impressive. And then even early in the second half, they only led by 8 at halftime, but they pushed that lead back out to 13. And then you know, the defense couldn't hold it. You know, your offense gets you the lead. Your defense is supposed to hold it. I thought, thought the defense, I mean, my God, Baylor shot 73.7% in the second half. They hit 14 of 19 shots. It was something. All right. The Texas women, Eric, they are already in, heck, they might be in Kansas City already. But they have concluded their regular season. They beat BYU to close out senior day. And they will be the number two seed. And on Saturday, they will face the winner of BYU and Kansas, teams they beat in the regular season. That game will be 5:30 on Saturday. With a win, the Texas women would likely face Kansas State and 6'6" Ioka Lee. She's a problem for Texas. She handled business against Texas in Manhattan. Texas beat K-State without Ioka Lee in Austin. So that was another reason Texas needed to beat Oklahoma so that they could be the number one seed and avoid playing K-State and Ioka Lee, because K-State's got size. They've got a bunch of 6-foot guards. They got Ioka Lee. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Chip. No, I'm just, you know, smiling as you said that, because I think we all kind of knew, and I think both of us, Chip, if memory serves me correct, or it might have just been me. Days all run together here, but covered that that Kansas State Texas game, and you knew.
Yeah, we were both there checking that.
We were both
one out.
There, right? We were both there. Okay, all right. You know, like I said, days are run together, but you knew, Chip, that. And credit Kansas State for putting together really a strong fight, even without Ioka Lee. But you knew, right, that game, if that game were played with Ioka Lee, we might be having a Vic Schaefer, you know, the jacket's getting ripped off and he's frustrated because she's that type of player. She was actually named when the awards were actually dropped earlier today, and we'll talk about that in a second here, but named to the Big 12 All-First Team. So, yes, you talked about, Chip, right, not being able to beat Jenny Baranchik in Texas Texas and Oklahoma, puts Texas in the number two seed, and they likely have to face Kansas State. But it actually was a big day for the Horns, Chip, and the fact that Madison Booker, coming the first ever freshman to win Big 12 Player of the Year honors. She was named co-player of the year with Oklahoma Skylar Van, but yeah, you know, definitely a big time honor for Madison Booker, who picked up a lot of the slack with Rory Harmon. Obviously lost for the year with that ACL injury after the UConn game, and a big time day for a lot of the women's team. You know, Deonna Gasson, sixth player of the year. She came to the year actually named to the Big 12 preseason all first team. So really cool to see how she carved out a role for herself on the bench. Aaliyah Moore earned second team honors, and then Shea Holly, Shaylee Gonzalez, and Taylor Jones earned honorable mention. Shea Holly also named to the all Big 12 defensive team. But yeah, Madison Booker becoming the first Longhorn to win Player of the Year since Brooke McCarty did so in 2017. So yeah, Chip, a big time day and a big time honor for the freshman from Mississippi.
Yeah, think about that. Madison Booker comes in, very highly touted wing player, wears number 35 because she loves Kevin Durant. She can get her own shot. Rory Harmon goes down and to a season-ending injury in late December, and Madison Booker gets shifted over to point guard. Rory Harmon was the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year. And Madison Booker, in replacing Rory Harmon, wins Big 12 Player of the Year and Big 12 Freshman of the Year. It's awesome. It's a great honor for her, well deserved, and her future's so bright, it's ridiculous. So, now let's see what the Texas women have at the Big 12 tournament. They are seen as a likely number two seed in the NCAA tournament. So this will be a lot of fun. What was not a lot of fun, Eric, was the Texas baseball weekend down at Minute Maid Park in Houston. Texas got beat 6-3 by LSU. LeBaron Johnson, who was dynamite against LSU last year, lasted only three innings, and Texas never led in that game. And then in their second game, they play Texas State. They're down in that game 7-3, but they battle back. They take a 9-8 lead in the seventh. They take a 10-9 lead in the eighth, and then they lose 11-10. And they went through five different pitchers who each gave up at least one earned run. And then against Vanderbilt in the closer, the final of the three games from the weekend, Texas up 11-3, kind of cruising. You're thinking, oh, wow, here we go. And then they lose 14-11 as Texas went through seven pitchers. So if there's a positive, and I'm reaching here, David Pierce got a good look at his bullpen. And there were some good moments. But there were some tough moments. And so Texas is playing Texas A&M tonight. We'll recap that next week, as well as Texas's weekend series coming up with Texas Tech to start Big 12 play. So don't give up on Texas baseball yet, folks. Just be patient. We know David Pierce likes to say, want to be good early and great late. All right, Eric, you ready for some take it or leave it?
It's my favorite time of the show, Chip. Let's do it.
All right. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Everybody's favorite segment, Take It or Leave It, is next right here on the Flagship Podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
And if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on into some Take It or Leave It. All right, Eric, I'm going to start things off here. The player who helped himself the most at the NFL Combine, more among the Longhorns, of course, was Xavier Worthy. With that 4-2-1 40-yard dash, setting the record, fastest man in the history of the NFL Combine. Take it or leave it.
Chip, I am torn on this one, right? Because in my mind, coming into the weekend, I felt that Byron Murphy was no doubt going to be the first Longhorn taken, and I still feel that way. But I wonder if there's a team that's going to see A.D. Mitchell and say, hey, we really liked what we saw in Indy, and we really think he's a guy who can climb to that top 20, top 15, right? I'm going to leave it on Xavier Worthy. I think A.D. may have helped himself out just a little bit more, but it's close. What says you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to leave this as well. I am torn between Byron Murphy and AD Mitchell, because if AD, let's say Byron Murphy came in, most mock drafts had him 15, 16, right around the middle of the first round. If he improved his stock to get closer to the top 10, we're talking millions of dollars of difference, because we know the rookie draft is slotted, and it's a big difference between going number 10 and going number 16 and going number 32. It's double. It's double the money. So, you know, I'm hearing that Byron Murphy had that kind of combine, and NFL scouts are now like, oh, wow, okay, man, we got to rethink this. And AD Mitchell, I think, was a guy who was seen somewhere behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze and, you know, maybe the LSU receivers. And I think he moved ahead of guys like, you know, Keon Coleman at Florida State and some of those other, you know, bigger receivers in this draft. So AD Mitchell could have really helped him. I think those two probably helped themselves more than Xavier Worthy, because I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I think there is a chance that you could see a team like the Kansas City Chiefs with the last pick in the first round grab Xavier Worthy, thinking, is this guy the next Tyreek Hill? We sure love speed in our offense. We know Andy Reid loves that. So, but I'll leave that one for now.
All right, Chip. And listen, I'm not advocating. I'm objective, but I wouldn't mind a team in Tampa, Florida, choosing Xavier Worthy to pair alongside a big possession receiver. Okay. I got to get that off my chest, Chip.
What happened to Scotty Miller?
Oh man, Scotty Miller. Yeah. We can say that for another day.
Take the it new or leave Scotty it. Miller, Xavier Worthy.
Exactly. The take it or leave it number two, Chip. Texas basketball isn't worthy of an NCAA tournament bid, a spot in March Madness with an injured Dylan Dessou. Take it or leave it.
You know, I'm going to leave this because, look, we've talked about this. We think Texas, if they can get into the NCAA tournament, and depending on the draw, they could be a tough matchup for somebody because of the inside scoring and three level scoring of Dylan Dessou and the ability of Max Asemus to get his own shot. But my man, Caden Shedrick, I agree with you, Eric. You talked about how he's coming on. I mean, he's playing much better basketball than he has since the Home Depot belt started showing up on the bench for the Texas Longhorns. And look, if he can continue to play the way he has, and you can get some consistency from Dylan Mitchell and Tyrese Hunter and Kendall Weaver, then this Texas team, which got a 14-point lead at Baylor with Dylan Dessou not doing much in the first half, they could still be a worthy NCAA tournament team. Are they, you know, a shell of themselves without Dylan Dessou? Probably, but I'm going to give the rest of the guys the benefit of the doubt. We saw Tyrese Hunter kind of come alive in the NCAA tournament last year, really hit some big threes in the second half of the Xavier Sweet 16 game to help win that game and get Texas into the Elite Eight. So I'll leave it for now, Eric.
Chip, do you know what I think may help this team in a weird way? If for whatever reason were to come down to that, and again, Rodney Terry was optimistic in the immediate aftermath, saying that he believes Dylan Dessou will be okay. But what I think in a weird way helps this team is that there's a steady, you know, sample size to go back and look at this team without Dylan Dessou, right? Because he missed the early part of the year. So if the folks that be the selection committee, we don't know what they look like. Well, actually, you do know what they look like without Dylan Dessou. And quite frankly, that wasn't the Dylan Dessou that we know, that, you know, whether it's Mike Boynton or Josh Eiler or, you know, whoever it says should be in contention for Big 12 Player of the Year. That wasn't that Dylan Dessou who took the floor last night at Foster Pavilion. So I think you have a good idea of what this Texas team, quote unquote, could look like without Dylan Dessou. So I think to answer the question, I am leaving it. They are worthy of an NCAA tournament bid.
All right. Texas transfer tight end Amari Niblack will catch at least 40 passes in 2024 after catching only 20 at Alabama last year. Eric, take it or leave it.
That is a strong take it for me, Chip. Not only will Amari Niblack see the starting tight end role, which of course will earn him more targets, but he's going to be used in that JT Sanders way, right? In the slot in various places. And not only that, Chip, you have to consider, while Steve Sarkisian, offensive coordinator Kyle Flood, Jeff Banks, right? They talk about last year wanting to get JT more targets down the field. And you have to assume, I think it's a safe bet given Amari's ability as an athlete downfield, that they're probably going to want to use him the same way. This is still an offense that will throw the ball to the tight end at the line of scrimmage, or, you know, kind of the intermediate passing game a lot, or a fair amount. So in my mind, that is a strong slam it, take it to Vegas. Blame me if you don't get it. Take it.
Like that. Conviction. I agree with you. So I'm going to take this. When you consider that JT Sanders had 54 catches in 2022. And we wrote extensively about the fact that he might have fewer receptions, but more yards going into the season. And that's exactly what happened. He ended up with 45 receptions in 2023, but he had 682 receiving yards, which is more than the 613 he had with the 54 receptions. So he had a better downfield average, 15.2 yards. And Amari Niblack's yards per catch average at Alabama on his 20 receptions was 16.4 yards. So, yeah, I think Amari Niblack might fit in really nicely to this Texas offense. And I expect him to catch at least 40 passes in 2024. All right, kids, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for tuning into this episode of the Flagship Podcast. Please like and subscribe the YouTube channel if you're listening to us on another platform. Hey, always appreciate the 5-star ratings and a kindly review. Helps us with our bosses. For Eric Henry, I am Chip Brown. Until next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com. Stay safe and keep the faith.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.